Ladies and gentlemen, it's week two, and this is a Conference USA Report podcast, episode two. Today, we learned that Conference USA is not good. Ladies and gentlemen, the Sun Belt went 3-0 against us, and in dominating fashion, pretty much. Appalachian State, the Mountaineers won 45-9. Now, the thing about that one, that's their best against our worst, right? Appalachian State is one of their best teams. I think maybe, you know, Troy's in there. Coastal Carolina, kind of mid, maybe lower tier. But UAB really should have won that game. And what was the other one? The other game was the, Louisiana Monroe taking on Southern Miss. Not good all the way around. We're going to recap it, and we're going to talk to Ed Miller of the Virginian Pilot. He's going to wake up early and give us a call and talk about Old Dominion dropping a 17-point lead and allowing Florida International to come back and win. Impressive win for Florida International. We'll talk about that now. Let's begin, as we should, with the good. Good crowd. All right, crowd. Thank you. Thank you very much, crowd. The good. North Texas, probably the best team in the conference, at least playing the best. I still think Florida Atlantic is the most talented team and has a higher ceiling than North Texas. But North Texas playing about as well as any team can play. They play two poor teams, and that's also a criticism, right? However, you can only play the teams that you can play, right? The teams that are in front of you, those are the teams that you're going to play. North Texas beat up a bad, turns out, SMU squad, and a new FCS team. I mean, they're like 10 years old or something like that, but Eric Morris has the Incarnate Word Cardinals on the right track, but it's very early on that journey. And so, you know, okay, only 7 teams in the league have played games against FBS teams, and only one has played 2, that's UTSA. If you want to further divide that up against winning teams, Rice has played 2 FBS winning teams so far. They obviously played 3 games. So we don't really know too much about any team here. By the way, Rice has scored 28 points a game against those 2 teams. Western Kentucky only the 3, Middle Tennessee 7, Florida International 28. That's against Indiana. Before we go ahead and crown North Texas, you know, as leader of anything, we have to acknowledge that they have not played anybody. And, you know, here's where it kind of hurts them, right? You know, say they go up to Fayetteville from Denton, and then they put on a show and they win. They beat Arkansas. What does that mean? Well, it means that they will have played a losing FBS team. Yes, that's right. SEC powerhouse Arkansas, I say powerhouse in quotes, hopefully you heard the sarcasm there, they will be 1-2 because they dropped the game against Colorado State. So we'll be looking at North Texas and saying, yeah, but you beat an SEC team, but did you really beat anybody? You can't win for losing sometimes in this game, and that's the fun of college football. So we're not going to get too high or even too low, but we'll say this, that good teams are supposed to beat bad teams. And I think if you look at the rationale behind some of the better advanced statistics, those metrics take into account that fact that, you know, a good team is supposed to beat teams that are terrible really badly. If I play LeBron James, he should destroy me pretty easily without a sweat. You should expect that. So if we think that North Texas is a good team and they're playing bad teams, well, we expect North Texas to play this way. 46-23 2 weeks ago, 58-16 this week. And, you know, before you get a little too crazy with that 16, say, they allowed 16 Incarnate Word. Well, Incarnate Word is, you know, they're pretty talented there. I talked with Eric Morris from Mean Green Nation. You know, he's in San Antonio. I talked to them, and he said he has about 4 or 5 guys that could play FBS football. And among those is Raekwon Dickens, the running back that scored from 90 yards out against New Mexico and from 55 and 42 yards out against North Texas. So I wouldn't be surprised. We always look back on this later. if Dickens, you know, scores about 20 touchdowns this season, because he already has three, and he looks dangerous. Three this year, and then I think they play, like, I don't know, SFA or something like that next week. They get to FCS. Mason Fine, 418 yards, four scores against one interception. It was a bad interception, but, you know, he looked comfortable. He was putting the ball where he wanted to put the ball. North Texas is favored by 43.5, and they won by, was it 42? So, you know, you can maybe say they underperformed. I think the concern, so they're so good, we can talk about concerns. What is concerning? They can't run the ball, haven't run the ball well, and you can maybe point to UIW and say they have a pretty stout-ish run defense, and, you know, they are so vulnerable against the pass that you might as well just toss it up there and see what happens. North Texas is averaging 6.14 points, yards per play, excuse me, which is right in line. It's the exact same number as they averaged last year. So, you know, that's all good right now. Everything is going fine. They have the fourth best number of plays. I guess they've ran the 185 plays is what it is in two games, which is fourth in the nation. But in that teams in front of them played three games. So they're getting a lot of plays in, and that means the defense is getting the ball back for them. That is the thing to look out for if you are the rest of Conference USA. But I'm sure the rest of Conference USA is concerned about themselves. Anyway, let's move on. Another good game. Florida Atlantic 33, Air Force 27. How good is Air Force? I don't know. We didn't think that Florida Atlantic was going to be this unimpressive. Maybe a slow start, maybe off the pace of last year, yes, but I don't know, there's something up there. They don't look good, and mostly in the run game, which is really what is concerning. Now then, even Mike Sanford pointed out at Conference USA Media Days, a little bit snippy, I might add, that you know, things are going to change over there, and teams might have a shot. It's not the same Florida Atlantic, he said, and he was right. New offensive coordinator, new defensive coordinator. Chris Robinson, he struggled against Oklahoma. Maybe not so surprising. Maybe we should have given him a little bit more leash there. It was his first collegiate game, and he came out, set a record in this game. 471 passing yards, school record. Devin Motor Singletary has yet to really dominate a game, but he is showing some signs. He's still good. You can see him shifty, breaking tackles, and I think he had a big run in this one, something like 36 yards, something like that. Lots of room to improve for Florida Atlantic, and I think they will. But that's a good – it's a win, but it was not an impressive win. And if you were looking at this conference, say Florida Atlantic and North Texas as the best teams, you'd like them to – show out a little bit more, put on some impressive showings. FAU only putting up 33 and allowing 27 is not so impressive, but a win is a win. You know, at the end of the season, nobody's going to really take that close of a look at those kinds of things. Marshall, 32. Eastern Kentucky, 16. Lots of herd fans made mention to me that I was wrong in underestimating the Marshall Thundering Herd. And I respect their opinion. I don't believe that the offense is explosive enough to keep pace in this conference. And I mentioned this previously, that no team has won the title without also leading the league in scoring. In 2013, the last team to break that trend, Rice, actually beat the league-leading Marshall, averaging 42 a game. In the conference title game. That was an upset. So you can't really bank on winning this league if you can't score. And, you know, 32 points against Eastern Kentucky is good, but it's not great. You'd like to see that 45. You'd like to see, you know, 48, something like that. That said, Isaiah Green looked good. Heard control the game against an Eastern Kentucky team that has a decent offense. And I think everybody believes that Marshall has a really good defense, and so they can make up for it, you know. I think the thinking can be summed up by saying, hey, well, North Texas ain't going to be able to score 58 points against this Herd defense, and we'll score enough and get the win. Isaiah Green had three scores. Run game, still missing. I don't know that any team in this conference has a good run game right now. That's concerning, though. Three fumbles. Marshall looks the most comfortable. You know, like they look comfortable offense, defense. They haven't really struggled, controlled both games. But, you know, I will say this, that I think Miami of Ohio got shut out this week, and Marshall allowed 28 the week previous. So, I don't know. I don't know. I wouldn't call Marshall the best in the East. I think that title is vacant right now. Nobody looks good enough to say, oh, that team's the best. You know, you get best by default, but I'm not going to call you the best. The most comfortable is what we'll say. The only team with a metric, a number that can lay claim to the best team in the East is FIU, because they're 1-0 in the league. Then that's all that matters, really. None of these teams are making the playoffs. So FIU at 1-0 is on the way to winning a conference title. You know, do you believe me? You get it? You understand what I'm saying? 28-20 winners over Old Dominion. And, you know, let's talk to Ed Miller of the Virginian Pilot right now. Let's get him on and let's talk about this game, because this game was kind of ridiculous. All right, so game of the week, something like that, although it wasn't maybe the most exciting game. Florida International won, what was it, 28-20? What was that final score?
Yeah, 28-20.
Yeah. Yep. I've been looking at too many scores. They're all running together now.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
On one hand, I feel like Old Dominion should feel good because they played much better and they jumped out to a 17-point lead. But on the other hand, anytime you blow a 17-point lead, you are very disappointed. What's the mood like over there?
Yeah, I would say Bobby Wilder used the term extremely disappointed, and yeah, that could have been an understatement. Yeah, I mean, the thing of it is, they were up 17-0. There was kind of a shift in momentum right before the half, where FIU scored 14 points in about the final 7:41 of the second quarter. And, you know, so FIU clearly had some momentum heading into halftime. Now, halftime happened to last 2 hours and 20 minutes because of the rain delay. The lightning delay was called right when the teams went to the halftime locker room. So a normal 20-minute halftime became 2 hours and 11 minutes. So, you know, you figure that any momentum factor would go out the window at that point. You know, both teams are just, you know, trying to stay loose and do whatever you do in a two-hour rain delay. And but FIU came out and just dominated. They ran like 32 straight plays, 19-play drive to open the half. Then they got pinned at their own one-yard line, so no problem. They went 99 yards in seven plays, I think it was. I'm looking at the box score right here. Yeah, seven plays, 99 yards, 2 minutes, 55 seconds. So, I mean, they just were a machine, you know. And then after that, Old Dominion settled down and, you know, forced some punts, but wasn't able to do anything offensively themselves. So for the second week in a row, Old Dominion really lays an egg in the second half. I mean, last week they were outscored 38-0. In the second half, this week it was 14-0. So, you know, you can do the math, 52-0 in two games. Not too good.
Yeah, and I mean, some of that's a quarterback situation. That two quarterbacks played. I don't know that either of them really impressed. 11-22 for Stephen Williams and 8-15 for LaRussa. I mean, I guess he was a little bit the better quarterback. I mean, what's the story there?
Yeah, basically, Stephen Williams came out, you know, after struggling last week at Liberty. Everybody acknowledged that he just didn't play well. He missed a lot of open throws, a lot of throws that he made all through camp. He was overthrowing receivers. He was throwing the ball high. He was throwing the ball wide. I mean, he was just kind of wild. And they took him out last week to kind of calm him down. And he came in and did marginally better. And this week they kind of did the same thing. He opened the game with a 75-yard drive. You know, he was 4-for-4 in that drive. Next possession, he was a little bit off, and then they went with La Russa again. You know, Bobby Wilder's thinking is that if they can get Williams, who's still just 18 years old, by the way, he won't be 19 until November, if they could just get him over on the sideline, kind of calm him down, have him watch La Russa, you know, run the offense, that maybe that would be beneficial. So, you know, Williams didn't play well. La Russa played okay. I mean, Jonathan Duhart did a lot of the work. He had a couple long catch and run receptions that went for, you know, one went for 83, the other one for, I think, 63 yards. Other than that, they couldn't get a lot going in the passing game. And so, yeah, Bobby Wilder said he's going to play both guys going forward. But clearly, you know, Williams, it was his job. You know, that he was anointed the guy last year.
Right.
And they said they're going to ride with him, you know, come what may. But they're sort of reevaluating that. La Russa is a guy that's been around for a long time. He's a redshirt junior. He's kind of a coach in the field kind of guy, just not physically really gifted as a quarterback. He's, you know, about 5'10", 5'11". And he's, you know, he's one of these guys that, I don't want to call him a game manager because it's probably not accurate, but, you know, he's probably not your guy, you know, it's going to take you anywhere. I mean, he's okay in a pinch, but, you know, Williams has more upside. I think everyone would agree, but it's just a question of the light for him.
How much of this, do we want to call it a collapse? How much of this collapse was due to the fact that the delay kind of killed a lot of the crowd momentum? I mean, by the end of the game, like, nobody was there. I think.
Oh, yeah, no, I had an over-under on Twitter. I said, how many people do you think are going to come back? Delay, and, yeah. You know, people were saying, like, 150. One guy, I think, I said 42. But I think in the end, there were probably a few hundred people that made it back. It, you know, the game didn't resume until 11:15 here, local time, after, you know, basically a two-hour delay. So, you know. And then, ironically, it was a pretty good game at that point. But, yeah, you know, I think most fans, you could probably not, you could hardly blame them. You know, they either went home or, you know, they did whatever they were going to do. But, yeah, I think that had something to do with it. Although Wilder, I asked him about that. He said they did everything they could to stay loose in the locker room. And, you know, Butch Davis kind of joked that this was no big deal for them because they live in South Florida. And, you know, they're used to lightning delays, you know, pretty much almost on a daily basis at practice. So apparently, too, I heard they sent out for food. FIU sent out for food. I haven't confirmed that, although I think there was a guy there, a friend of mine, who was streaming for the Miami Herald, so it might actually be his story. But I don't know if ODU did. They may not have had to since they're, you know, obviously at their home stadium. But, yeah, it's a complete tale of, you know, two teams. As I wrote in my story, you know, there's no real blueprint for how to come out of a delay, but, you know, having said that, you know, FIU kind of put on a clinic on how to do it.
So what do you feel? Where is Old Dominion at this point in the season? I mean, last year was, you know, it was a down year, and a lot of that was attributed to injuries and, you know, maybe just a little bit of underperformance, but this was supposed to be a bounce back year, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Bobby Wilder's a very open kind of guy. I mean, I'm at practice pretty much on a daily basis. I mean, the only days they make off limits is Friday. So pretty much in a typical game week, he's got his press conference Monday. You know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I'm at practice. So, I've seen a lot. And during preseason camp, I would think I missed maybe one or two days. So just from my own observations, I thought, you know, this team is better. They look sharper. They have more of an edge. He was pushing them harder in practice. They have 22 seniors who wanted to be challenged. You know, last year's team, I thought, was a little shy on leadership. They had a small senior class, and they tended to be sort of quieter guys. This year, they got some really vocal guys. And, again, more experience. They were hit by injuries last year, particularly on offense. So, yeah, I mean, I know there were pick six in the East, but, you know, the feeling here was, you know, they were going to be better. They could surprise. You know, you expected Williams to take that next step with all the experience. So, yeah, it's been hugely disappointing. There's no way around it. I mean, they did play better against FIU than Liberty, certainly. But, you know, a loss is a loss at the end of the day. And particularly the kind of the way they're losing these games, second half adjustments, which it seems like other teams are making that they're not able to really counter. So, you know, there's a vocal segment of the fan base that is kind of up in arms. You don't know, I don't know how many people that is. It tends to be the kind of people that, you know, populate the message boards, and they have a louder voice than out of proportion to their numbers. But yeah, it's definitely concerning here, particularly going to Charlotte next week. You know, it's just, they only beat, I think, Charlotte 6-0 last year, I think it was. And then, of course, they've got East Carolina, who just bounced back. I'm sorry, they had Virginia Tech after that, pardon me, and then, you know, East Carolina. So, you know, there's nothing easy here for the Monarchs, and the season could get out of control pretty quickly. I mean, you already start doing the bowl calculations, and they got to go 6-4 to make one. And, you know, that's looking, you know, like an uphill battle at this point.
Yeah, East Carolina looked poor, but then they went and beat North Carolina yesterday. So, I mean, I don't know what to expect over there.
I don't know if that says more about North Carolina than East Carolina, but it certainly shows that East Carolina is capable. I mean, you know, they're a regional program here in this part of the country. They're mm-hmm. about 2 hours from Old Dominion, 2.5, down in Greenville, North Carolina. And, you know, they've had good programs over the years. They get talented players. You know, they've had some coaching issues in the last several years, but I mean, Old Dominion going down there, certainly I wouldn't expect them to be favored. I mean, they might have to favor at this point against really anybody anymore. But, yeah, it's and then, of course, Virginia Tech has looked great. Yeah, and, you know, this is a Virginia Tech area here in southeastern Virginia. There'll be a lot of Hokies fans here for that game. And Old Dominion fans are already talking about, you know, maybe sitting that one out. They just don't want to go and, you know, watch their team get beaten badly.
I think the silver lining, and maybe you agree with me, is that no one looks good in Conference USA right now, except maybe North Texas. And I think if you're a diehard North Texas fan, you maybe had some quibbles. But I don't know that anybody has looked good. I think the worst part of this game was that it was a conference game, and that Florida International is now 1-0. And that's the only thing that means anything, I think, practically for everybody. Like, nobody's going to compete for a playoff spot, right?
Exactly. Yeah, so. I totally agree. I think that I'm thinking if they had won this game, you know, I know exactly what Bobby Wilder's going to say. He's going to say, "Hey, we're 1-0 in conference. That's all that matters. This is a conference game. Last week we can forget about. You know, Liberty's an independent. It was a shame they lost by 42 points. It was a shock, frankly. But yeah, and it being a conference game makes it all that more painful too, especially a home game too. I mean, you can't forget that they had them at home. Really a lost opportunity. And, you know, FIU was solid. I mean, I thought they made some adjustments, particularly defensively on Duhart. They really geared their coverage to him. They stopped the run. They found some spots in the OU secondary that they could exploit. You know, they did what they had to do. So, you know, kudos to Butch Davis and FIU.
Yeah, James Morgan looked good in the second half, but he was thrown to some wide open receivers there too. So,
yeah, I don't know if he's the guy. I guess, you know, the Alexander, played sparingly. Yeah, Morgan was okay. I mean, he did what he needed to do. They had some. I was impressed with a couple of their receivers. There was a couple of really bad breakdowns in the ODU secondary with the corner on one play. Basically, thought he was going to be playing run support. And they said he was supposed to be playing like deep third of the field, so you can guess what happened there.
Yeah.
The guy ran right by him. The other one was like a double post or streak route, and I guess the corner was supposed to have the outside guy, and the safety was going to have the inside guy, and of course then they didn't play that well either, and another guy, you know, alarmingly open when you see a guy 10 yards behind the nearest corner. There's no safety over the top. It's, you know, clearly something happened. They've been having some of those plays, and I guess that just speaks to preparation and, you know, coaching and the guys trying to pick up on what they're doing. So, yeah, it's you know, ODU's got it. It's kind of got its back against the wall. It's early season, but, you know, this has been kind of a proud program, even though it's a brief window of time they've been playing football. But, you know, they were very good FCS startup. Took their lumps when they moved to FBS, but then 2 years ago they won 10 games. You know, last year they kind of chalked up, as you said, to injuries and a few things, and they really had every right to think that they'd be better. And the kind of the alarming part, too, is, you know, with all the seniors leaving, I think next year was kind of regarded as a rebuild year. So if they don't do it this year, you know, they're not sure when they're going to, you know, they're going to turn around.
I think, you know, again, once again about this conference is that, you know, 2 years is a long time, right? 2 years ago, Western Kentucky was hoisting the Conference USA trophy. for back-to-back years, and, you know, just yesterday they lost to FCS. So fortunes can change, and I guess it's good and bad. Everybody has to be a little fearful and, you know, look over the shoulder.
Look at FAU. I mean, you know, coming in and you know, last year what they did. And, UAB, you know, coming back from, you know, start canceling or post, you know, putting the program on hiatus.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 2 years is really a long time, you're right. And it feels like, I'm sure it feels even longer here, you know, for ODU. And, you know, Bobby Walden is an upbeat guy. I think you've dealt with him. He's a positive, generally guy. And, you know, he was last night about it. I was upset as I've seen him, you know, I guess last week too, he was right there with him after the scale of that loss. So yeah, they hurt equally bad, but yeah, they're looking for answers right now.
Well, for what it's worth, I think I'm still hopeful. I think, you know, like, because they have the ingredients there, they got good players, you know, fortunes change real quick. I'm not as down, I think, on Old Dominion as other people are. But like you said, we'll see. It's a long season, but, you know, a lot of concerns in week two. You
shouldn't FIU's be doing pretty a... good. I think they're pretty good. They played Indiana tough. ODU can do some things defensively. Oshane Jimenez was really good last night, at least in the first half. And their thing has been, you know, sustaining it over a whole game. I mean, they've had 30-minute stretches in both games where they played really well, and they just haven't been able to maintain it, particularly, you know, second half when games are won and lost. And they made a real point of emphasis to be better in the fourth quarter this year. You know, they were outscored badly last year in the fourth quarter. And I was at practices where, you know, he's like, we're going to win the fourth quarter. They were out there pushing hard. And, you know, so that's been particularly disappointing for them that they've been, you know, outplayed late in the games.
Well, thanks, Ed. We'll get you back to your Sunday. Appreciate you jumping on the episode 2. Conference USA Report podcast. Appreciate
no problem. I feel like I was up all night. The game didn't end until about 12:30. East Coast time.
Yeah.
I was leaving the press box about 2:00 in the morning and getting home about 2:30. So yeah, it was definitely a long night for everybody involved.
Yeah, I don't think you were expecting to be like still playing right when Rice was kicking off in Hawaii, were you?
Well, it's interesting. There's a weird rule. I don't say it's a weird rule, but you know, during the delay, we were all wondering, are they going to play this game? What are they going to do? And we got on the phone with Seelig, and he basically said that they had to resume before midnight, or else it was up to Judy McLeod to make the call. And someone else told me there was a two-hour rule. I don't know if that's actually true, or if the delay exceeded 2 hours, they wouldn't be able to play. But I'm not sure about that. But it didn't quite get to that point. It was like an hour and 51 minutes officially. So, you know, Butch Davis, and they wanted to do it and they could play. And ODU probably would have been happy just to take the 20-14 halftime lead and call it a game. But it didn't happen.
Well, thanks again, Ed. Appreciate it. Thanks for coming on.
Okay, Adam. Good talk.
Few people know how many people are in the studio audience here. It's like 45,000 or something like that. It's crazy. My thanks again to Ed Miller from the Virginian Pilot, one of my favorite beat writers on this Conference USA beat here. We'll try to get him in here again. He's good people. He's good to talk to, and he has a lot of good information. I guess we just need Old Dominion to do better, right? So how do we feel? How do we feel about Old Dominion, ladies and gentlemen? My feeling is that the schedule's not so great, right? East Carolina, they beat North Carolina, so that's good, but they lost the week previous to, was it Eastern Michigan or something like that? Is that what I'm thinking of? I forget who they lost to. It was a meme. So might give me my money, right? Old Dominion is not as bad as they're playing. I do not think. They've got too many good players to play that bad. They got to figure it out, and I think a lot of that is the quarterback. Steven Williams is obviously talented. He has more tools than Blake LaRussa, but LaRussa right now is probably their best option because I think if they got to sit Steven Williams down and say, hey, look, see how the game is going, that probably means you're not ready to be the starting quarterback. But there are no other options there, so what to do? Difficult situation. Every new program kind of hits one of these low points. And, you know, if most other programs can lean on existing infrastructure to kind of build that kind of thing. But right now, this whole program is built on Bobby Wilder's like personality. So, you know, if he's getting a little, disappointed, maybe, about this whole thing, a little depressed, maybe slowing down a little bit, then everybody else will. But I think good things are in store for Old Dominion. They still have a good staff. They still have good players. And the schedule in front of them is not too terrible. What is it? Charlotte next week? Charlotte's not good, right? We'll talk about that next. Briefly, and not because, you know, we want to forget it, but it doesn't really tell us too much. Louisiana Tech dominated Southern 54-17 in a game that we all expected to go as it did. Tech was favored by 34.5 or something like that, and it covered. Jamar Smith, 380 and two scores. That's good. That's what you want to see. He's playing like the quarterback that I at least expect him to play. Like, run game was, you know, was working. Tech, I still think they're probably more talented at the two deep across the board in the West Division. And I think they get a bye, they play LSU, and then they play at North Texas. And that is the first huge game that's going to determine a lot. Like I said, North Texas hasn't really played anybody. And, you know, they're both going to come off and play an SEC squad. And I think maybe what tips this game is that Tech is probably going to be looking forward to LSU and maybe, just maybe, overlooking North Texas a little bit, which is natural, right? You know, LSU is the big dog in the state. Louisiana Tech is going to want to jump up and bite them and say, hey, look at us. They always want to do that. There's always that kind of feeling there. And, you know, maybe North Texas gets that advantage there. Plus, it's in Dallas, right? It's in Denton and not in home field. So I think the scale tips North Texas's way, but that's going to be a big one, and I'm excited about that. That's all the good, though. You noticed that was only four games, right? One, two, three, four, five games. The rest were pretty, pretty bad. Baylor, 37-20 over UTSA. I put this in the bad category, not because, you know, UTSA didn't play well, because they did. They played a lot better than they did against Arizona State. And you might start thinking, hey, Arizona State's pretty good because they beat Michigan State. But Michigan State might not be that good, and they might have been overrated. That's the way this game works. So what are we looking for from UTSA? Some spunk, some passion, right? They played in front of 42,000, something like that. I think they did a Pack the Dome special. They opened up the top, the upper deck, and they, you know, they sold tickets for like $5 and tried to get a whole lot of people in there. They did a good job, got 42,000 in there. It sounded loud. I think somebody said, this is one of the loudest places I've been in. The Dome really helps a lot there. Nice home field advantage for the Roadrunners, although the student section doesn't know how to do their TIFO there, and they held it upside down. Well, it's where the wording was facing them and not outside. So maybe they can fix that next week or something. 37-20. It looks like a blowout, but hey, UTSA scored 20 points. Until you look at the box score, you're pretty excited there. They only managed 255 yards and threw for only 157, though. The defense allowed nearly 500. I had this game on in the corner of my screen as I was watching the other games. UTSA never really threatened Baylor. They got a couple points where Baylor maybe had to say, all right, well, let's just go out and take care of business this drive. And they went on and did that. UTSA were not ever really close in this one. I don't know. I never got that feeling there. And Baylor just pretty much handled them easily the whole way. UTSA, they really got to figure out what they're going to do with that offensive line. Same thing applies to them, which is why I'm pretty low on them, as I've been talking about with Marshall, is that you got to score in this league. They might play spoiler, right? They might jump up and bite like a North Texas or something like that, you know. But I really don't see it from that squad. Much better performance, and they got to be excited about that, Roadrunner fans, because that Arizona State game was terrible. So you get a nice little performance in front of your home fans. That gives you a little momentum and keeps everybody, all the questions, at bay. And they're fortunate. They get Kansas State next week. Kansas State hasn't looked good, and they got blown out by Mississippi State at home. Mississippi State looks real good, but the week before that, they had some struggles. And then finally you got Texas State, a little rivalry game, a little rival. Texas State coming to UTSA. Texas State's not that good still. They're still in rebuilding mode, and nobody really knows what's got happening there. But can't afford another Sun Belt loss, guys. Speaking of terrible losses, let's move on to Middle Tennessee, 61-37. You're like, what? They didn't lose, though. Why is it in a bad category? Why are you calling it a loss? Because it kind of felt like a loss, you know? I mean, games against FCS squads should be put away early, and you allow the backups to get in there and put up some stats, and, you know, everybody feels good. That's how it should be. It's quite often not the case. I mean, you look at Florida State, right? They almost got beat by Samford. Required a late touchdown in, like, the fourth minute of the fourth quarter, and an interception return pulled that game away. Here, Middle Tennessee scored 61, and you feel good about that. Five touchdowns for Stock still. But it was a shootout. UT Martin came within 10, 37-47 in the fourth quarter. The defense allowed 460 yards of offense, and it just, you can't be excited about that. And my quick look at my Twitter machine tells me that Middle Tennessee fans are not. Now, I know Twitter is not representative of the whole fandom there, but is anybody excited about that? Are you listeners right now saying, you know what, I feel real good about that Middle Tennessee win? The way they handled DT Martin out there, that was amazing. It's what I figured Blue Raider football is all about. I doubt it. And so we put that in a bad category. But, hey, a win is a win is a win. And I think everybody figured, hey, maybe a loss and a win coming out of the Vandy-Martin duo of games. And that's the result here. And you can look forward to the fact that, you know, the conference season hasn't begun yet. And these are all, you know, just games to get ready for that conference season where things matter. Georgia's coming up. That's not exciting in terms of like your prospects for that game. But, hey, you know, you always jump up and bite. Anything can happen, right? And that will be the balm. It'll be some salve that cures all ills there before Florida Atlantic. Is it Middle Tennessee hosting Florida Atlantic? I think that's what's happening there. But that should be a good one. Conference season is a whole new thing, and everybody can wipe the slate clean. So, I don't know. Right now, Middle Tennessee doesn't look good to me, and I don't like them. I don't like the way they're playing. They're supposed to be mid-pack, make a run, you know, maybe feel out how everybody's doing. If, like, Florida Atlantic is struggling the way they are, then, you know, then you look at Middle Tennessee and say, oh, that they can do something. But they don't look poised and ready to do that, to make that jump. Speaking of teams, middle of the pack, Southern Miss, I didn't really think of them as a team that we're going to challenge, but they have enough talent in some of the right spots that you thought, hey, you know, if you're not prepared, you got to look out for USM. And they got that quarterback. So Jack Abraham stepped in, threw 31-46 for 378 in two scores, but threw two interceptions, and I think he fumbled twice. I know he fumbled at least once. The offense struggled. They were terrible in the second half. Two turnovers. I think it was the fumble and the interception. They gave the ball away on downs. They missed a field goal late. This is all in the second half. And they blew a chance. They blew an opportunity to win. They were driving for a final field goal and then threw an interception. And that was all she wrote there. Not looking good. But I don't really expect too much different. But this is a game that you feel like the conference, like even when a middle tier Conference USA team should beat a middle tier Sun Belt team, right? That's what everybody feels like. I'm just saying what you think out here, guys. And it didn't happen. Conference USA is now the worst conference in America. Meanwhile, I mean, we're going to say that one, this is not meanwhile, so I misspoke. And two, I put this in the bad category because it's a loss and all losses are bad. But Rice showed out and they impressed yet again. 29-43 losers overnight. This game began like midnight for most people. I watched a tiny, tiny little bit of it as I fell asleep. It was my bedtime story. Rice played okay. You know, they look I mean, it was kind of funny. You see Cole McDonald out there, you know, spreading out the receivers. Everybody spread, thrown to a tiny little short group of receivers. They're catching and making moves. And then Rice comes back and they get in power eye with like two tight ends. They hand the ball off and they do a pin and pull, right? Counter, power. And they're running the ball. That is college football to me. I like the contrast in styles. And it was fun. I think, was it Sean Stankovic had three scores again? Is that what happened? I'm lying. He didn't have three. He had two. 299 yards passing on 20 of 31 attempts. Asukpa, 104 yards again. I think he's hit 100 every time. Or did he have 80 last week? Rice is 1-2. And that is about where we expected them to be. Let's not get crazy. But they've looked a lot better. They haven't got blown out like just so badly. You're like, this team is awful. They don't look like they're competing. They've been competitive in every loss, and that's what you want to see in a first year under a new coach. They get Southern Miss on the road in Hattiesburg next week. It's not even next week. They get a bye, so 2 weeks from now. So they get some time to rest up, to figure out some things, to look at some tape, and then they get Southern Miss. That should be a good game. I feel like Rice is going to jump up and beat somebody. And, you know, if Southern Miss plays the way they did, if UAB plays the way they did today, if UTSA even plays their best, I still think Rice is going to jump up and bite somebody. And they're going to be the surprising team. They remind me a little bit of UAB last year. And that people just kind of wrote them off, but they didn't take a look deeper. Mike Bloomgren has them competing. I always thought that roster had some talent on it already. And, you know, they were coached and recruited by a guy in David Bailiff who knew what he was doing. The most successful Rice coach in decades. So I just think they needed a new voice. And they had some close ones last year. So I've always expected Rice to be more impressive this season. And so this doesn't really surprise me. It maybe surprises me how quickly it's happened. I thought we'd see some of this in conference play, but we're seeing it in out-of-conference stuff. Do we want to talk any more about App State? Do we want to talk about how the quarterbacks for Appalachian State went 15 of 15 for 295 and three scores? That's when I get mad at NCAA 14, like if I'm simming it or something. I'm like, that quarterback nobody goes 15 of 15. What are we talking about here? This is fake. This is a fake game. I quit. It turns out it is possible. So, you know, if it's in the game, it's in the game. Turns out. I don't really know what to say about this one. Charlotte was never really competitive in this. App State controlled the game. Mountaineers did whatever they wanted. Doesn't look good. Charlotte's going to be bad again. That's what we learned. Unless they can get a miracle win like they did last year at, was it at UAB? I mean, I don't really see them even getting a win. I think we see an over by Charlotte in conference play. UAB, Coastal Carolina. That was another disappointing, ugly loss. It looked good early. Kendall Parham. He had the big highlight run. Was at 64 yards or something like that. Made it 21-7. We thought, yeah, this is the UAB that looked really good last week on that Thursday game where they just came out taking care of business. They got the chip on their shoulder. They're ready to prove everybody that, hey, last year might have been a fun story, but this year is about being a fun team and a good team. And that was about it. Nick Vogel kicked a field goal later. That made it 24. But after that, Coastal Carolina, six straight touchdowns to end the game. And they scored a couple in the final 3 minutes. And it basically went like this. Like, UAB would mess up, touchdown, CCU. UAB would mess up, touchdown, CCU. UAB would try something desperate, touchdown, CCU. And I don't know really what to say. It was punt, missed field goal, turnover on downs, pick. Didn't look good. UAB was favored. Spencer Brown couldn't really get room to run. And once things started getting a little hairy there, UAB didn't really have an answer. That defense is what mostly concerns me there, because that's what they hang their hat on. I feel like the offense would have figured it out if they didn't have the pressure to score every time down the field. And I mean, what do we think about that? You know, like, you need to play defense. Yeah, I know I've been talking about offense, but you need to play defense in this league. And some of these teams with good defenses are allowing a lot of yards, a lot of points. I mean, you know, UTSA's defense is supposed to be good, 500 yards by Baylor. And then you're like, well, that was Baylor. But, I mean, shouldn't it be 300, 400 yards, you know? They were getting cut up and down the field. UAB, 5-6 straight touchdowns, whatever it was. That's not good. That's not what you want. And you're like, yeah, well, the offense wouldn't help them out. Well, it's a team game. Defense got to step up and do their part. So I don't really buy it. I think UAB should have played better. They should have played better on defense. And yes, the offense was terrible, but you got to stop them. You got to get a stop, help your offense out. Give them a short field, give them something. UAB was favored by 9 in this one, and they lose by, 23? Awful, awful loss. Just terrible. I'm going to say it again. Season hasn't started yet, right? The conference season, so it doesn't really matter. Like, this is going to be bad for, bowling. But, I mean, UAB should still be in contention. Maybe don't freak out too much, the fandom. But, I mean, you can't be happy about this. Here's the thing. I call these the uglies, right? The App State, Coastal Carolina, Maine, and UTEP losing, right? I mean, Maine and UNLV. Which is worse? UNLV stomping all over UTEP? Is it bad only because we thought it was going to happen? So we're like, yeah, well, unsurprising. Or was the 31-28 loss by Western Kentucky worse because we maybe didn't think it was going to happen? I mean, I don't know. I don't like that UTEP is going out there and saying, well, they're going to lose by 24. Now, that was the line against UNLV. That's not ideal, right? Isn't that bad? Whatever. Let's talk about UTEP first, and so we can quickly move on to this Western Kentucky team. UTEP scored 24 points. Hey, highlight. Last year when they couldn't score anything, I think, they averaged 13 a game or something? 24 points is good. That's good. You feel okay about that, but UNLV had 52 on them. It's not fun to watch. The normal minor fan contingent that is pretty passionate has been muted in these last 2 years. They went winless last season, and you know they started out 0-2 this season. Not a whole lot of excitement here, and that's sad because I like the minor fans. They're fun, they're engaging, and they at least had one of the better blogs in the Conference USA blogosphere. At least one of the more dedicated ones. UTEP is trying two quarterbacks, and neither of them looked effective. It looked like Loxley running the ball is the best option, which reminds me very much of 2015 North Texas when they had DeMarcus Smith as a quarterback. North Texas couldn't pass the ball worth nothing. And I said back then, hey, you know what? Number one option should be Jeff Wilson. Number two option should be DeMarcus Smith. Number three option is throw the ball to Jeff Wilson. And that should be the entire offense. I feel like UTEP should maybe look at that. And, hey, what's the coincidence here? They both were coordinated by Mike Canales. I don't know. I don't know how you improve that without time and recruits. And they haven't had a whole lot of time or recruits there to improve any of that. So what are you going to do? All right, let's move on to the worst loss of the week. Western Kentucky jumped out to a 21-0 lead in the first quarter. I think it was after 5 minutes, right? I think that's what Brad Stevens wrote in Bowling Green Daily News. 5 minutes, they were up. Everything felt good. You're like, look at this. Western Kentucky's actually pretty good. You know, that Wisconsin team really held us down. But look at us now, you know, showing out. Burp. No, it didn't happen. Maine scored, 31 straight? 31 straight points. And this is what I'm talking about, this defense. Western Kentucky had an okay showing a couple seasons or last season against FAU when they kind of held them a little bit. And you were like, you know, this offense can kind of score with FAU. You know, the defense just was a little bit better. Maine, 31 straight points. What are some of these other teams going to do to you? I mean, I think Western Kentucky's lucky they don't play like North Texas or something like that. which is a big turn, right? Because like, was it 2 years ago, Western Kentucky went to North Texas and just, you know, blew them off the field. Mike Sanford, 6-9 in his time in Bowling Green, just less than 2 years ago, right? It was December 2016. Western Kentucky was holding up the conference trophy again, and I saw a lot of Western Kentucky fans, rightly, maybe, saying, we're probably a little too good for this team, and everybody else needs to, you know, do their part. You know, we're tired of carrying this conference. We really need everybody to step up. And so it's kind of funny. I gotta say, I like the you know, the switch here. How the mighty have fallen. That said, you don't want, you know, your two-time defending champ going 6-9 in 2 years, right? Western Kentucky is bad. They're a bad football team. And I used this effect last time on, I think, the Mingry Nation podcast. You know, the breaking news. Western Kentucky is bad. I don't need to use that. It's not breaking news to anybody anymore. We all know it. We all feel it. I think when you lose to an FCS school, that's when you got to reconsider things, right? That's what North Texas did a couple seasons ago. They're like, hey, maybe we need a new coach, right? Fire the guy at halftime. I don't know that you fire Mike Sanford right now, but I think you know, heat his seat up. I don't know what you do. I really don't know what you do. Western Kentucky had three greatish hires. Willie Taggart, who had a tough day, by the way. It's like everybody that ever coached Western Kentucky had a tough day. Yesterday, it seems. You know, like Willie Taggart, you know, lost. I think Bobby Petrino was the only guy that had a good game. Yeah, because was it Brom? He got upset at Purdue, right? All that momentum's gone. But I think a lot of fans are like, man, I really wish Jeff Brom was here. We could score back then. There was something like 13 straight offense possessions that did not result in points. Just bad stuff. The final attempt to tie the game was blocked at the field goal. So you can say all three phases were terrible, right? 31 straight points, 13 straight possessions, no scores, and then, you know, special teams allows a blocked kick. Bad times all around in Bowling Green. What is there to do? I don't know. Mike Sanford's on the hot seat. At least for me, I haven't really been a believer since I saw him last season. I was like, wow, that offense used to be good, and now they're bad. And they had an NFL quarterback out there. They had some leftover talent from the Brom era. And some defenders, not even Western Kentucky fans, but they're like, hey, you got to know that Western Kentucky lost a lot of guys. A lot of those guys graduated, and they were Brom dudes, and they're gone now. So they're not there. They're maybe not as talented as they were previously. And while that is acknowledged, we'll go ahead and say, you know, hit the acknowledge button, but you got to do better. And part of the job is, you know, bringing in your own talent. And, you know, Mike Sanford could say, hey, well, we didn't really have guys that fit my system, you know, and maybe that's why we were not so amazing out here in, you know, this running the ball, and we're going to get better. We got to do better. We couldn't run the ball. Couldn't protect the quarterback. Well, now you can't do either. And everything looks terrible. What are you going to do? Once again, your league standings, FIU, 1-0, everybody else in the East, doesn't matter. In the West, everybody's tied at 0-0. 0-0, actually. O is a letter. Superlatives. Well, who's the most improved? Is it Old Dominion? Is it UTSA? I saw somebody say FIU is the most improved. Maybe from half to half, yeah. I mean, you know, they did okay against Indiana. Old Dominion, they got stopped by Liberty, and, you know, they had a 17-point lead in this one, so maybe give them some credit. UTSA was awful, and then they were just bad against Baylor. So, I don't know. Maybe UTSA. Problem child, Western Kentucky. Teacher's pet, North Texas. Just finishing the assignment early. They're like, hey, we went ahead and beat Incarnate Word. We're done. It was like 40-0 at halftime. Okay, thanks, North Texas. And the cutest couple, Rice and Mike Bloomgren, just going together great. You know, that was it, intelligent power football. What he calls it over there. Bad week overall for Conference USA, but hey, everything changes super quickly in this game of college football. Just the nature of it. These are kids out here playing, and they rotate through 4 or 5 years, right? So we'll see. Let's not make too many declarations at this point, but we'll just acknowledge that it's pretty bad. There is still a league to play for, and even if it's a bad league, you can still win it. And, you know, nobody really cares, you know, years hence what the, you know, how bad the conference was. And I think for the better teams, your North Texas, you know, we'll go ahead and say Marshall, your FAU. If you do not win this season, how do you feel then? You feel pretty bad, huh? You're like, wow, that the league was down and we couldn't even win it. It's like Arsenal, right? Arsenal finished second to Leicester City. Was it 2 years ago, 3 years ago? That was a chance, man. You had the chance. I think that's about it to talk about this week. Special thanks once again to Ed Miller for jumping on the show. Ladies and gentlemen, we are in iTunes. Please subscribe there. Or as Bomani Jones says, subscribe. And, you know, leave a review, leave a rating. Tell me how much you love me. And when you want to tell me how much you hate me, send me an email. That's podcast@conferenceusareport.com. That's CUSAreport.com. And, you know, happy to get the feedback. Learn a lot from what you guys tell me. And I appreciate it. Thanks for listening. Yo, see you next week.